Support for Commodity Week comes from the Friends of WILL and from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. With crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the September 6th edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Ellen Dearden of Ag Review. She's out of Morton, Illinois. Mike Zuzulo from Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting from Atchison, Kansas. And Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting in Waco, Texas. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us and listen to us on demand online anytime you'd like. You can do that on our website at willag.org, willag.org, or any of your favorite podcast apps, including Stitcher, along with the NPR One app, SoundCloud, and many, many others. Well, let's begin with this question, and I think Mike Zuzulo will start with you. Next week on Wednesday, the United States Department of Agriculture will update its crop production and world agricultural supply and demand estimates reports. What are your expectations for changes, whether they be in yield and crop size with the United States or other numbers that might come in the world figures?
Yeah, I don't think we'll see yield increases in domestic corn and beans. That's not what I'm expecting at this stage, Todd. I think the USDA will probably wait until we get deeper into harvest since they're putting their ear weight so high on the corn especially. I think the global numbers are probably the issues that I'm going to be watching, especially the global demand side for China in terms of the soy complex, and then the global ending stocks for the wheat. One of the things that we're starting to see right now is the wheat market starting to give way with the currency markets and those emerging market currencies. And it's, I think, sending up a warning flare right now to the overall grain complex, that being it's hitting some major technical support levels as the Russian ruble hits its weakest in almost 2 years. And it's interesting because when I talk about the weakest in 2 years for the ruble, we actually have almost identical stocks to use ratios right now in the world for the wheat compared to where we were in August of 2016 going into the September report. And I think that's why wheat is so important when you look at it in relation to what's happening in the outside markets.
Can it lead the rest of the marketplace?
I think it will. I mean, I think that if we get rallies in the corn and beans and the wheat doesn't participate, I think the rallies will be cut short and the rallies will most likely be rallies to sell.
Ellen Dearden, farmers really have been thinking, I would guess, a lot about what they'll do with this crop when they harvest it. Of course, they won't be able to, most of them, put it all on the farm. Much of it will have to go to the elevator. Do you have advice for them as to what to do with that once they get it there? Do they need to go ahead and put it in commercial storage? Should they sell it across the scale? Are there other options that they should consider?
Well, you've got some pretty decent carry in the bean market. I think you probably could nearly or you're able to pick up even commercial storage charges by storing beans, because not just the carry shows up in the futures market, but we're also seeing a tremendous basis improvement from fall into December. Now, that basis, I think, will continue to deteriorate as we move into the calendar and move into some of those months. But I'm telling people to store the beans at least into the end of the year, if not the first of the year. On the corn side of things, it may be difficult to store corn commercially, although I think it has fundamentally the most advantageous picture of the two commodities.
When you look at demand side of the picture of this ledger, Ellen, what are your expectations for usage by the livestock sector as we finish out the numbers for this year? And we won't get that final quarterly grain stocks number until the end of the year. And how do you see that changing, if very much, in the next year?
Well, certainly going into the end of this year, we've got a lot of cattle on feed that are going to come out this fall, but they're continuing to see some pretty significant placements. Also, our hog numbers are up tremendously. Poultry numbers seem to be rather flat to just a hair higher. So my expectation is that we'll see pretty good demand on the corn side of things, and probably meal as well, although without a big export book for DDGs, we'll be using more DDGs for that protein need.
Dan Zwicker, when you think about tariffs and trade as it's related to the Trump administration, as we're recording on this day, a Thursday, the 6th day of September, I have not yet seen that the Trump administration has any plans not to put the $200 billion on tariffs coming from products out of China. I expect China will respond. Will this make much of a difference?
I don't know at this point. It makes a lot of difference. The China thing looks like it's going to go on a while, at least through the fall. I think that probably, weather problems or weather issues maybe in South America would probably bring them to the table a whole lot quicker than probably anything else if that new crop supply in South America would become vulnerable. But at this point, it looks like China has kind of hunkered down and have at least doing what they can to avoid buying any U.S. beans and trying to wait out the Trump administration either from a political angle and or see what happens, in this fall's congressional elections. I think they're hoping that maybe things might change after that if things do change, and Trump might be easier to negotiate. But it looks to me like the China thing is probably going to stick around for a while.
Mike Zuzulo, I'm pretty certain that you probably will have thought about the Trump administration's mitigation plan for the tariffs, which includes $1.65 a bushel for soybeans, though there's a round one and round two. I suppose you might think of it as, at this point, 82.5 cents. When you put that into the equation, what does it tell you about marketing soybeans, if anything?
I don't think it tells you much. I was laughing a couple days ago in a sarcastic way that a producer was talking about on Twitter, thinking about what he'd do with his payout. And he said he's thinking the Sonic happy hour is a way to spend it. And so, I mean, I think it's going to keep us hanging on to a degree, Todd. But when you're talking about basis levels in Champaign, Illinois of almost 60 under, and it goes, and that's a good basis level, and you get out to our part of the area and it's $1.20 under, and you go up towards North Dakota and it's sticking out towards $2 under, there's no way you can put salve on top of that. So I don't think it has much to do with the government help. I think what we really need from the government, and I think they made a big show of this at the farm show, and I'm glad they did, because I think this is a major feature of what's holding corn back, and that is ethanol demand, the E15. I really think we need something like that. That's a true boost in the arm where you create new demand, not help with the government payment.
Well, this, Mike, and I'll stay with you for just a second, is a battle between the oil industry and the corn growers. And it, to what I can tell, it looks like it's simply a battle over percentage of total gasoline gallons that are used, and that the ethanol industry is at 10% at this point of the gasoline supply in the United States. They'd like to go to 15%. The oil industry, not particularly interested in that, and the government would need to step in at some point to make that change. It doesn't appear that the Trump administration is all that interested in making that kind of change. At least that's the way I'm reading the tea leaves. What do you see?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the only thing I'd say, Todd, is I'd be a little bit more sympathetic to that side of the equation in the energy sector if we weren't running a 4% GDP and we're gonna spin out a lot more energy demand than we've been used to the last 10 years. And the tariffs aren't hurting the energy producers right now. So I think this is what the administration, if I have to be critical of them, they don't balance things, I don't think, the way that maybe you should in terms of, if you're going to put up the manufacturing and agricultural sector, to get a foreign policy move to denuclearize North Korea, to help secure Asia. I'm on board with that. I understand that. I'm understanding and sympathetic that we need China to help us do that. And the only way we can get China to play ball with us is economically. I'm all in with for that. But there are other smaller details that I think you can move around the board in terms of the chess pieces to help get what you want without damaging one side so bad versus the other. Sorry to stand up on a political soapbox, but if we only had 1 or 2% GDP, I'd be more sympathetic to the energy people right now. But we've got a dollar that's been going down. We've got strong growth, and these tariffs are not really hurting the energy sector at all right now.
I'll come back to you, Ellen Dearden, and you can jump in on this topic if you want. Otherwise, I'd like you to discuss more on the soybean side. We've talked about marketing that crop, but this is a big crop, and it looks like it's a big crop across the whole of the nation. Are your expectations for USDA, which already has a large number in its crop production figures, to change that very much and to make it maybe bigger once we get to next Wednesday and the WASD report?
I think we will. I expect domestically that USDA will plug in a 52 bushel to the acre plus, just because the yield, or at least the pod counts, look very large, and all the way from Ohio into Nebraska and Kansas. So I think they will up that. On the world side of things, I look for USDA to probably lower ending stocks, maybe down around 95 million. They were at 95.5 or 95.6 a year ago or a month ago. But those world stocks of beans for 18-19 are going to be bumped up, maybe 107, 107.5 million metric tons. So that gets me a little bit nervous. You know, it will be interesting to see how the South American weather plays out and what's going to happen down there in South America, because Brazil is really expecting to produce a lot more beans this upcoming year, increasing acreage 3-4%.
What do we know about the start of the growing season there? I know on the Thursday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report, Mike Tenora said that they look like they should be off to a good start in Brazil. Have you heard anything to the contrary?
No, they should be off to a good start. And the fact that the Brazil's high court has allowed Roundup to be used, not to be banned as a previous ruling had come, certainly gives green light for a lot more bean acres.
Dan, can you give us a technical picture of the soybean complex at this time, including the oil and the meal?
Basically, we're sideways on soybeans. We've been there for a while. There is an indication that we're maybe going to break to the downside. And I think, you know, that is going to probably, like I mentioned earlier on the Thursday afternoon show, is going to depend upon how these yields come in. But, you know, when you look at last month's supply-demand table, where they put carry out, you know, almost at 800 million bushels for next year, we're beyond a demand problem almost, if Ellen is correct that we're going to see another couple bushels increase in beans, if that's in the works. I mean, the Pro Farmer Tour would indicate that we could go up a couple more bushels. I've even heard as high as 55 by some people. And, if we're going to do something like that, and then all of a sudden our carry out, starts climbing to 900 million bushels. Like I said, I think we're beyond demand. I mean, I'm a crop, the back-to-back record crops have just dug us, you know, we're in a deep, deep, deep hole, and it's going to take something significant to change the fundamentals of this thing. So, I think, when you just look at the chart, it's so far it's sideways. But if I incorporate what it looks like coming down the road, as far as the fundamentals go, it's going to be hard to hold it. You know, it just looks to me, this whole ag complex, is we're going back to the pre-renewable fuels price levels. It's just a matter of when everything falls. You know, we overproduced wheat. We got too much wheat around. This year, everybody increased their bean acres because of the high bean prices. Now we're going to have too much wheat, too many beans around. So I suppose next year, everybody's going to try to increase corn. And then if we have another good crop, then we'll have too much corn. So carryover levels in all three is going to get to the point where it could be very burdensome. And and I don't think it's more of a world production problem, because, you know, I think as a result of the high prices that we saw from 08 to 2012, that has encouraged world production acres to go up and production to go up. And it just looks to me like it's going to be pretty tough times on the farm unless we get into a major weather problem in Brazil. I think short term, you know, there looks like there might be some harvest delays, but it's really hard to get a market to go higher on harvest delays, especially as long as your extended models indicate that things are going to start drying out.
Well, on that note, a couple of things, Dan. PLC, if they should get something done on the farm bill, will be what producers are going to want to sign up for. And if your numbers are right, then PLC will definitely be needed, I would think, over the next several years. And I've been thinking about this particular problem as it relates to the farm for a while, and what I might do for the Farm Assets Conference in November this year. It's the Tuesday prior to Thanksgiving. That's the 20th. I'm working right now on some other options that commodity producers might be able to use and how they work into the full system. I've made some contacts, of course, with Anheuser-Busch. They have been working with barley growers and have a goal of keeping them financially stable. I think that's an interesting concept for a large company to have. I'd like to hear how they're thinking about doing that. They're just, I know, in the early development stages. Over the summertime, and Ellen Dearden, you were there with Raquette Collins from McDonald's, looking at the Illinois Beef Association meeting, looking at how much beef McDonald's uses and how their sustainability might track all the way back to the farm. And I contacted as well Clarkson Grain, which is outside of Cerro Gordo. And this is the part where you bring it all together and think about what can I do on the farm looking further down the line, and not so much further, within the next 5 years. So the transition out of GMO crops to non-GMO, for instance, to maybe bring some kind of premium in. Those are some of the discussion points, along with all of the commodity marketing that I've been thinking about as it relates to that Farm Assets Conference. That's the Tuesday before Thanksgiving. I have not put that up online, but put it on in the back of your mind that this is something you might want to consider. And some of the transitions, I think, producers all across the Midwest will have to consider where they'll be thinking about different types of commodities, or at least different channels, niche markets within a commodity. So hopefully that'll be helpful. And Dan, that was a pretty bearish scenario that you painted. I'm surprised that it was that bearish. Do you think, is this a 2, a 5-year problem, a 1-year problem? How long out do you think it'll go?
Well, I'm trying to put a bottom in this market. By being buried. No, I think it's the same old problem we've been through in agriculture for, you know, 100 years. We're just living longer now, and we get to see this cycle come around more often than what we would like to see it come around. But I think it's just you know, over history, agriculture is only really, let's say, real profitable for only about 7 to 8 years out of 30 years. And then it's marginally profitable for maybe 7 years to 10 years. And then it's negative for 7 to 8 years during a 30-year window. And, you know, we had our profitable times between basically 06 maybe, and it lasted to 2014. And, you know, since 14, things have been just kind of going downhill. So I think we're in a period of very minimal profits. The only people that's going to survive this thing, I can see, are the ones that are highly efficient. They know how to produce big yields. The ones that are producing the big high yields and are in an area this year that is allowing them to go way in the stratosphere on the yields, they're probably going to be okay. But the areas that came in on the short end, and I'm hearing the Bloomington area is coming in really short. And I think I saw one of your articles on Twitter that there's an area there east of I-39 that came in on the short side of precept during August, but that was the only area. So maybe that's part of the reason why Bloomington's coming in way low. But, you know, unless we see significantly lower yield reports from farmers in the next couple of weeks or so and see a consistent die to that, corn, you know, corn's got the best balance sheet. It can kind of recover, I guess, especially if the yields don't go up anymore. Like Mike mentioned, they did use a fairly high ear weight. If that would slide down a little bit, then, you know, maybe the corn balance sheet tightens up. But I don't know how you get the soybean balance sheet tight anymore. I think it's beyond help anymore. I don't even think China demand would bring back beans at this point when you're talking about a 900 million bushel carryout. And, you know, basis levels will stay wide for, hell, I might even be 10 feet under by the time they narrow. If we're going to have a 900 million bushel carryout, I mean, that is something that we're talking about mid-1980 levels type stuff. Now, I know you can massage the numbers any way you want to do it. It still may be not quite as bad on percent of use or per carryout based upon use. But when you're talking about 900 million bushel carryout in soybeans, and U.S. has always been kind of the residual supplier, at least through my career watching the markets, as long as foreign buyers could buy the crop elsewhere, they would buy the crop elsewhere and only come to the United States when they had to. So we ended up carrying the world supply for most of the time, and I see that happening again because I think we're going to pay a dear price for these abnormally low interest rates for the last 18 years. And, you know, we got a whole generation of or a couple generations out there that don't know how high interest rates can go, and they don't know what a 7 or 8% interest rate can do to, you know, home buying, automobile buying, farming. We got a whole generation of farmers that has had really low interest rates for years. They haven't even begun to see what high interest rates, and I just think the dollar is going to go higher, and I think agriculture is going to be tough to recover, but I think the overall economy is going to purr. I think it's just going to go, and, you know, agriculture is going to be, you know, cheap food. It seems like, you know, that's the answer, cheap food. Then you get the general economy going and the people's got money to spend on other things.
Oftentimes when agriculture is having tougher times, the rest of the economy will be doing very well, and to the converse as well. When agriculture is doing very well, sometimes the rest of the economy isn't. You almost, Dan, make me hope that the Chinese thing is not settled, because the second round of mitigation might be very useful if there's that many beans around. On the macroeconomic side, Mike Zuzulo, as you listen to this discussion, what do you see in the U.S. economy or around the globe that's either good or bad?
Well, I mean, to pick up with what Dan was talking about was the dollar and the strengthening of the dollar. That's the heart and soul, I think, of where we're headed. And It's been something we've talked about for several months now, but if we get into a 1997 type 2002 style trade where the dollar becomes a safe haven because the emerging markets get sick, like the Asian financial crisis we had back then, you know, what Dan is talking about has a lot of bearing, and that's where the interest rates go higher, like he's talking about, because it'll be a race to the bottom in the currencies, and it'll be a race to the top in the interest rates, and the dollar will be the safe haven by, you know, all accounts or by most accounts. I think his point about the corn, as far as giving a little bit of daylight into this commentary, is really important, because right now the global stocks to use are at 14%. 2 years ago, they were at 21.5%. And as I said earlier, the wheat stocks to use ratios have not grown in the last 2 years and versus 2 years ago. And that's saying something given the pace we've been the last 4 years. So I think it continues to be a market where the feed grains get bought and the oil seeds get sold by the funds. And if that's the case, then you go back to what works, and that is $550 to $600 of revenue per acre on your soybeans. Get it locked in. You know, 784 in Champagne times a 70 bushel yield is $548.80. So you're knocking on the door even with these terrible basis levels. You get another 15, 20 cents up led by the meal here. Be on your watch to get beans locked in before harvest.
Ellen, you've been listening to this conversation. Anything to add?
Well, I wanted to throw in a little bit about the meal. The meal market's really taken it on the chin pretty hard over the last month's time. And as soon as we got down to this $300 level, we put the brakes on, and this thing has started to bounce a little bit, particularly on Thursday, had a nice upside move into the late trade. If this meal can trade between $300 and $330 over the next several months' time, I think this is the time to lock in meal needs for guys that need to buy meal in this fall time period, even if the bean side of things is a steady kind of market. I think we're at the bottom side of this meal market for now. Bean oil doesn't look so good.
Ellen, does the freight problem in Brazil, the tax rate potentially on commodities as it changes again in Argentina, help to lift that part of the marketplace?
Yeah, I think it does. This situation on the freight costs in Brazil is a big deal. And it looks to me that it could be kind of an across-the-board 10% type of a rise in that eventually. They're talking about a 5% really right up front. So that, to me, does boost meal demand out of the U.S., and I noticed that this Rotterdam meal market has started to improve as well. So I'm watching that pretty carefully.
Let's get a final word from each of our panelists now. Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Dan?
Well, I think, you know, short term, as I mentioned earlier, you know, I think there is some hope in generating some kind of rally here in September, but we got to keep in mind generating a rally in December, in September is very difficult. September and July are your two strongest seasonal months to the downside. Roughly 8 out of 10 years, you close lower on both those months. This year, we closed higher in July, so I'm kind of in the opinion that September has a still a shot at some kind of rally. And if that would occur, it may offer us some selling opportunities. And it may, for especially soybeans, to maybe go in there and sell the carry charge and kind of wait on the basis to come in and then kind of earn some carrying charges by holding on to the beans as we go on into next winter. So I guess I would be looking for maybe weather harvest delays or something, maybe a surprise in this August crop or September crop report that USDA doesn't ratchet up the yields. They may bring them down slightly for one reason or the other. And there's a lot of shorts in the market. So if something would come along, we could get a pretty good short covering rally, and that would be a good selling opportunity.
Mike Zuzulo from Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting.
Hey, Todd, I feel like that if the wheat can hold these technical support levels right here and, you know, kind of dovetailing what Dan just talked about, if the USDA can hold those U.S. yields like I think they can at the August numbers, I think that can give us additional short covering for the reasons he expressed. I think that those are short covering rallies in the soybeans especially, and to a lesser degree in the corn, to take advantage of if you've got profit in a per acre revenue basis. I think one of the things we did not touch on that is extremely important, and I didn't want to talk too much about it because of limited time, is the African swine fever in China. That could be a real hit to the demand, and we're already starting to see, as we've talked about, a demand hit being taken in China in terms of their U.S. bean imports. So 10 outbreaks in 7 different provinces that cover about 75% of the eastern coast of China is a large swath of such a deadly disease. So I think this is one of the additional factors that would make me a hedger on rallies in the next couple of weeks.
Well, thank you for the one additional bearish note there. I appreciate that. Ellen Dearden of AgReview, your final word, please.
Typically, at this time of year, we do see hefty spreaders buying wheat and selling corn, particularly in the December. I think that we are setting ourselves up the way this market looks for more pressure on this Dease wheat and an opportunity to see buying of Dease corn against it. Dease corn closed on Thursday night at 366 and a fraction. Keep watching. If we can get that thing up around the 380 mark, it's going to be time to make sales.
Ellen Dearden, of course, is with AgReview. She's out of Morton, Illinois. Dan Zwicker is at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. And Mike Zuzulo is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online at willag.org. That's W-I-L-L-A-G.org. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.